Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Nearly 30,000 Chinook salmon migrate through the lower Ganaraska River in Port Hope on their way to spawn upstream. It is one of the largest in Ontario. This magnificent display of nature attracts tourists and anglers from far and wide. However, the stretch from Corbett's Dam to the mouth of the river is a hotbed of controversy. The shallow waters and pools leave fish exposed to unscrupulous people who illegally snag or net fish. Plus, there are other impacts on the fish, the river, and the town. For some residents, enough was enough. For years, complaints were made. Efforts to remedy the situation failed. A petition was presented to town council calling for a ban. Yet for dedicated anglers, it meant a potential loss of a thriving fishery to those who acted responsibly. This fall, the Ontario government designated a stretch of the Ganaraska River as a fish sanctuary. In this interview, you will hear all about what that means for residents, anglers, and especially the fish. You decide if it was the right thing to do. I am so pleased to have with me today Adam Weir, the fisheries biologist for the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Robert. I appreciate it.
Before we get into the current situation with the Ganaraska River, I wanted to ask you about something the OFAH wrote in its letter to the Ministry of Natural Resources. It described the concerns about fishing on the Ganaraska River during the fall salmon run as having reached a, and I'm quoting now, boiling point in 2023. Can you describe the circumstances which led to that statement?
First off, I can actually very much appreciate that you read our submission. It doesn't always happen. We do a lot of policy work that I'm involved in and other staff are involved in. And sometimes it may not be known all the different files that we work on at a provincial, federal level, and even local municipal levels like we're talking about right now today. So first off, thank you, Robert. And then in terms of the boiling point is that, I guess to take a step back, is that the OFAH has had a long history on the Port Hope and Ganaraska River file. For myself personally, it's been about 7 years or so working on the file directly. That's with the Port Hope Salmon Working Group and in other ways as well, such as doing like community events and outreach, education and awareness within the community as well. My colleague actually is going to the Run Salmon Run event. He's part of the Bring Back the Salmon program. That is a conservation initiative that's been long running that we've been involved with. And with Port Hope, we've also produced and published some responsible angling videos too. In a nutshell, there's been this long extended history. And so some of the problems, social problems and bad behaviors that we've dealt with go back before the pandemic. I think what we're seeing right now is after the pandemic and, you know, there's been a lot of history before that time period as well. And so there was actually a good news story prior to the pandemic too. Jim McCormick, he was a former staff of the town, and he was reporting on a lot of the positive behaviors we were seeing. So it was nice to see. It felt like all that work that we were doing and have done was really contributing to some better outcomes for the Ganaraska and the angling community and the community in general. Then in terms of that boiling point that you quoted, is that last year, it just reached ahead in terms of what we saw on the river in terms of bad behaviors. We had record numbers of fish coming up the river as well. So you have more people flocking to the area, and then more encounters between like the community and what was going on in the river as well. And so it essentially was that like recipe, or in my words, boiling point for a lot of the problems that we ended up experiencing, which led to a petition, which I'm sure you're well aware of, a petition to essentially ban fishing in the Lower Ganarawska River. And then the story continues from there. And now we're here, Robert. So
Well, it does seem to be a long-standing problem. I know that in 2015, for example, there were 90 charges laid over a 4-week period during the salmon run. And that didn't include an additional 18 complaints from people in the community. And then subsequently, there were stories about people taking 27 fish home at one time. What is your experience with anglers who do this?
yeah, that's a really good question, Robert. And how I answer that question typically is that the individuals that participate in those bad behaviors, first off, they're not anglers. Second off, it's not fishing. By legal definition, it's actually not fishing either. It's these individuals are delinquents. I'm going to be careful in the words that I and how I say this too. I also think there's ways in which we could probably improve upon the system that we have in Ontario in terms of having information about regulations a little bit more accessible. This could be accessible even in different languages and how people take in information and possibly like better education and training. Robert, when you think of, for example, boating, hunting, trapping, firearm safety, all these things have high levels of training. Not suggesting that we need to necessarily go to those levels, but in the province now, the way it's set out, person walks into Canadian Tire Service Ontario, wherever you get your license, and you get your license, and then you can have at her, so to speak. So I think we could curb some of those behaviors in other sort of strategic ways as well. And but back to your question and looking at these individuals, not anglers, they're delinquents. And also, like you commented on some of the infractions that were dished out in 2015, but we also saw a decrease in those between the years of, I think it was 2017 and 2018. There's a town of Port Hope report on those bad behaviors actually decreasing, and a significant difference between those years as well. So, and that gets back to my point about right before the pandemic, it was kind of a good news story that we're hearing as opposed to where we are right now.
Well, it's funny too that you mentioned that because I mean, another thing that people see is fish being left to rot at the riverside. Why does that happen? Can you explain for people who aren't anglers, why would they see that?
Just another good question. I feel like a broken record here, Robert. And that's a it's a good one. And I think there's education and that needs to be done there. Public education. You have people that have no idea about the life cycle of our Pacific salmonids, in that they are semilparous. So semilparous means they're terminal spawners. So they spawn and they die. The opposite of semilparous would be iteroparous. So that would be multiple spawning events that a fish could have over their life cycle or life history. And so I think what we run into is that people that aren't aware of those differences between fish and how they carry out their life processes would see any dead fish and a whole bunch of anglers, and it'd be very easy to finger point and criticize the angler, like, oh my goodness, like what are these anglers doing to all these fish and killing them? But that's just their biological strategy, is to put all their effort and energy into that one event, that one spawning event. So yeah, I guess it seems like a theme here that we're already touching on is just that idea of like education, outreach, awareness, and connecting all those dots for people.
Well, let's take a moment and let's do some education because there may be people who are listening who may not know this part of the river or know anything about it, and maybe we can give them some foundational information. So, first of all, how many salmon and trout go up the river in the fall to spawn? Do we have a number?
Yeah, so there we have a river watcher program, and so literally it's a camera that's set up at the Corbett's Dam, and it monitors and tracks fish going through the dam. So this isn't an indication of all the fish, but it does give like a good reasonable idea. And if anyone wanted like really hard numbers, like going to the Lake Ontario, the Ministry's Lake Ontario Management Unit, they have all that information. They crunch all the numbers. There's also Lake Ontario reports too that would have information related to that. But in upwards of 30,000 plus salmon and trout would be the numbers from last year. So lots of fish, tens of thousands.
Now, for those who may not know the river, can you describe this section that was so concerning that's between Lake Ontario and Corbett's Dam? What does that look like? Paint us a picture so that we can see in our mind's eye.
Yeah, Robert. So that picture of what you're talking about and the Lower Ganarawska River. So it's unique in the sense that it has these. I'll refer to them as like step pools. So there's these areas of like shallow water, and then there's pooling areas where fish congregate, and then all the way up essentially to the Corbett's Dam, you have these areas. Now you think of like how many thousands. Tens of thousands of fish that are coming through the river, they become very vulnerable and sensitive. So you have that many fish and they're piling up in these areas, in these step pools, and they become more vulnerable and susceptible to anglers and angler exploitation. And I'm not saying like exploitation as like a bad word, like we're over exploiting fish, but just like exploitation in terms of potential like harvest of those individuals during a sensitive time period, such as the spawning run.
And it's very, very shallow, is it not? I mean, to the point that you can see the backs of fish literally coming
Yeah.
out of the water as they're moving up.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah. So any like, you know, if somebody was to go and visit like today, that they would see exactly what you just described. There's also images that were shared on the regulation proposal and the Government of Ontario's website that showed drone footage that was taken of those like step pool areas and just the overall sheer numbers and densities of fish in those areas. It's incredible. It's an incredible fishery, and it's actually, Robert, some people don't know, it's entirely based off of wild, natural reproducing populations of salmon and trout too. So this isn't they're not stocked fish. To be clear, the Ganarawska River isn't stocked. These are wild, naturally reproducing fish. That's not the case for all North Shore tributaries that we have in Lake Ontario. There are some that are stocked and some where we have a different management strategy and rely on just natural reproduction. And that's a testament to the Ganarawska River and its relative like good health compared to a lot of other systems too. So that's it's a good thing.
One more piece in our puzzle before we get down to the meat, and that is there's often a term called pressure. How much pressure is on a river? What can you tell us about that? What does it mean? And then what is the data telling you about pressure on the Ganarawska in this section?
When you talk about angling pressure, so if you were to look at the harvest of, say, Chinook salmon during the September period, there's a good argument that the pressure and the harvest that's occurring during that time period, it's not having, you know, impact or significant impact at the population level. It's just there wouldn't be enough harvest and exploitation that occurring that would be impacting things at that sort of population level within, say, Lake Ontario. But the other aspect to it, so maybe there's not that really significant biological reason per se, but when we talk about Fisheries Management 101, I'll put that in quotations, is that typically the way we would manage fisheries in Ontario and other places too would be to avoid sensitive periods. So this, for example, say spawning and nesting periods for bass, this is usually why you see like, early summer as like the bass opener and when it would occur. And you would avoid those spawning and nesting periods. And then for Chinook salmon though, instead of protecting those areas, we've or those time periods, we've traditionally had harvest occurring during those sensitive periods. So it's also a matter of principle, I guess, would be to be looking at protecting fish during that period, despite maybe there not being the best like biological argument in terms of like how exploitation and angling pressure would be impacting things at the population level, if that makes sense. But I would also like to like a dive too into crayfish populations, though, too, Robert. So as we're talking about this, there's other arguments in terms of why we would look to better conservation of a species like Chinook, too. And that was also in our letter.
I guess what I was looking for, too, is this idea of pressure being, say, for example, the number of anglers that fish a particular lake or river. You know, if there's a lot of people, a lot of cottages, like, say, for example, Rice Lake, there's lots of cottages, a lot of boaters, a lot of people on holidays come up, they fish. And if there isn't, their activity creates pressure on the population of fish. And so is it not true that that is also sort of at the most fundamental level, what we talk about when we're talking about pressure is just how much angling is actually taking place and what is the impact of that on the fishery?
Yeah, exactly. Like rod hours would be another way that we would look at that. You could harvest exploitation, angling pressure. I think you could all really like group all of those things into that whole conversation. And yes, it does receive a lot of pressure. And is it negatively impacting Chinook salmon at a population level? No, probably not. Is it important from a fisheries management perspective to protect fish during sensitive periods? Absolutely.
Interesting, because I mean, it's nothing if you go driving by at a particular time of year, nothing to see, just lineups and all kinds of people fishing up and down. And that's what we're talking about at this moment. So interesting.
Sure. Yeah. But and even when you see those lineups, too, and all the people that might be there, it's also like you need to think of the number of fish that are actually accessing that reach of the Ganaraska versus Lake Ontario as a whole, where they also exist. You know, so you have to put that into perspective, too. So it has the not the illusion, but it's for people, it's hard to sort of process in terms of what that means for fish on a bigger scale, like lake-wide Lake Ontario.
Now let's get into what's taken place. So what steps has the Ministry of Natural Resources taken to remedy this situation? Can you describe it for us?
Yeah, so there would be two aspects to the regulation that has been implemented now, actually. We'll probably get to that, too, at some point, Robert. It was implemented on September 1st, but there was also extensive consultation that went down, too. We can talk about that, too. But if you're the meat and bones of what was proposed and implemented would be a sanctuary from September 1st to October 14th. And then aside from that, sanctuary proposal, which would largely protect more so protection of salmon than other salmon and trout species. And then also implementing, though, an extended fall season, so additional angling opportunities from October 15th to December 31st. Whereas the season before, just generally speaking here, was the fourth Saturday in April to September 30th. So again, sanctuary September 1st to October 14th, and then the extended fall season from the 15th to December 31st.
What is a seasonal sanctuary?
So, yeah, a sanctuary would just be just plain and simple, no fishing at all for any fish species.
Are there other places in Ontario that have sanctuaries?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And actually, the Ganaraska River has had a longstanding sanctuary just directly downstream of the Corbett's Dam. Even at the federal level, there are you know, through the Federal Fisheries Act, there are sanctuary areas like created through provisions within that piece of legislation as well. But sanctuaries are extremely common, basic fisheries management tool that's used all across the province.
And the sanctuary, could you give us the area that it covers?
I think it would be easiest for, like, in terms of describing, like, that sanctuary area and where the regulations we're talking about take place. Like, you could go to the Government of Ontario's website for the proposed regulation, and it literally highlights on a map exactly what's going on with the regulations and how they change. And so that would be the best way, as opposed to making it sound too complicated in this conversation.
But we're basically talking about Lake Ontario to Corbett's Dam.
So it'd be the CNR. I mean, don't quote me on here. So the it would be an extension for the September sanctuary. So from September 1st to October 15th, the sanctuary would be extended from the Corbett's Dam all the way down to the CNR tracks. I could even pull it up here online,
Well,
and just
it's
so I'm
okay.
not, I just I
I think that's
sometimes
enough.
I yeah.
For anglers that are interested, as you recommended, they should go to the ministry website to get the details. Now, you mentioned that there is no fishing during the sanctuary period. Is there any other rules or any other guidelines that apply to this outside of just no fishing in the sanctuary?
No additional things, not that comes to mind in terms of like anglers needing to be aware of. There would be fishing still permitted. I believe it would be south of the CNR tracks, where it would be open, but that sanctuary area, like north is of the CNR tracks, I think, don't quote me on that, up to the Corbett's Dam, during that period that I mentioned for the sanctuary time period or the new sanctuary.
And just to be clear, north of the Corbett's Dam, that still falls under the regulations that existed before.
So they would be remain unchanged.
Excellent. How is this a good thing?
So the OFAH reached out to our Fisheries Advisory Committee, and we largely got it's our own like working group that we have where we discuss it's a platform for us to discuss fisheries related things that come up, government proposals, federal and provincial, all sorts of things. And we largely got support for this Ganaraska proposal. But at the same time, too, I think we have like some caveats. When OFAH goes on record and say we support it, you'd have to dig deeper into our letter to understand. We also have, for example, an FAC member that has been fishing on the Ganaraska River for several decades now. And to this individual, it felt as a major loss. It was a spot where he recreated. He brought his family, friends. It was something they did year round. And there's likely lots of other anglers too, not just within the town of Port Hope, but that come to visit Port Hope exactly for that same reason. So, and then on the other hand, it's a good thing because there's a lot of people that are really pushing for some major changes to the Ganaraska River. And seen through our own Fisheries Advisory Committee and the broader angling community, the majority of people are supportive of the regulation proposal. And I think too, we have the extended fall season, which is a little bit controversial, but it's something that's a token gesture to the angling community that would provide some additional angling opportunities. That said, some people are concerned about that impacting rainbow trout populations. But in our letter, you would notice that we just suggested that the MNR conduct some additional monitoring assessment. And there's always room for adaptive management of fisheries too. So if there was ever to be a problem, it could simply be adaptively managed to deal with that problem. So how is it a good thing? I think it is layered. It is complex. There are lots of caveats. Generally, we support it. It would be a good thing. It provides greater protection for a valuable sport fish species that wasn't getting protection during that sensitive time period. Now it would be, and there's also additional fishing opportunities. So multiple moving parts and things going on.
Some people might be familiar with the term called catch and release fishing. What is it, and why is it not practiced in this case?
So it would be practiced by many different anglers. There are anglers that are more so. There's different factions within the angling community. So if I was to take a step back, there are anglers that prefer catch and release style fishing. There are certain fisheries where it's really dominated by catch and release. So muskellunge anglers, for example, people fishing for muskies. The vast majority of muskie anglers are catching and releasing their fish and not keeping them. There's harvest-oriented fisheries too, like predominantly walleye fisheries are just they're known for being good table fare. And salmon and trout, I think you get a mix of people that are taking them for consumption purposes, and also just having it be more like a catch and release fishery. Also within these fisheries, Robert, too, you'll see salmon and trout where it's more catch and release oriented versus where there's more harvest oriented. So, for example, people might be more inclined to catch and keep a Chinook salmon versus rainbow trout fisheries. And factions within those group of individuals are oftentimes more catch and release oriented. So it gets pretty complicated sometimes when you start breaking it down like that and dissecting it, but interesting nonetheless.
There's also some other terms that we hear in relationship to the Ganarasca, such as snagging and netting. Can you very briefly just tell us what those things are?
So it can have lots of different forms, I guess, but snagging essentially like purposefully hooking a fish in an area other than its mouth would be a way that I would just sort of generalize that term. And then there's different techniques, illegal techniques that people would use, such as like a weighted treble hook. So that would send clear signals to an enforcement officer that this individual isn't out with like your typical lure. That you would expect them fishing for salmon and trout. They're using this illegal device, snagger, it would be referred to hook these fish. And what was the other term you mentioned there? Just
Netting.
netting. Yeah. So netting is would be another like dip netting a sport fish would be another illegal activity. I mean, you could dip net bait fish species. There are alternative methods for angling certain types of species of fish, and that can happen in certain FMZs, fisheries management zones. But it would be illegal for what people may have witnessed on the Ganarasca River with people chasing after fish and netting them that way. Yeah, it's definitely illegal. Gets back to our point about delinquents and them not being anglers, and it's not technically the definition of angling or a legal way of catching or hooking a fish.
You and I have already talked a little bit about this in our conversation, but I'd like to explore it a little bit more, and that is the public debate over the Ganarasca River. Now, on one side, you have some residents who want to ban fishing. And as you mentioned earlier, there was a petition last year. I think there was more than 13,000 signatures that were gathered to talk about action for this section of the river. On the other side, you have anglers, and you mentioned one, who want to continue to have access and have enjoyed it for a long time and have a rich history. But it's more than just about fish. I mean, there have been complaints about garbage. There's been complaints about hooks being left behind. There are other problems. Can you explain how you balance all these positions to come up with your position and what you think is reasonable for this section of the river?
Thinking of garbage and hooks, so there's a few things going on, I think, in your question there. So in terms of garbage and hooks and illegal activities, bad behaviors, if we were to touch on ways of addressing those themes, it would be enhancing enforcement. So this would be what we have done in the past, not we personally, like the OFAH, but the Ministry of Natural Resources is looking at enforcement blitzes. Albeit we understand that this is difficult and there's limited staffing and resourcing to conduct these sorts of things, but that's one sort of instrument that we could lever in order to improve enforcement that goes on. Also, bylaw officers too. So bylaw officers are available. Traditionally in Port Hope, they haven't been available on weekends. So oftentimes weekends are a time where anglers will flock to areas, and so you could enhance enforcement and deal with some of these activities, such as littering, which is a big issue, through bylaw officers, and even just their presence, being there, would help curb some of those bad activities. And the other thing too is just the local police service as well. So the OFAH, in combination with the MNR, have done police training where we go and we talk about some of the issues and how they can enforce some of the problems that we're talking about here today, Robert. And then the other thing too is, like, looking more broadly to tackle other North Shore tributaries would just be to have like an online webinar style way of administering that same sort of, like, training and teaching and educating of police officers and the different forces across the North Shore to help with these issues. So it would be like multi-pronged in the sense of how we could deal with these sort of things and not just rely on MNR, but have all these other like tools in the toolbox, so to speak, to be able to deal with some of these problems.
Was there any sense during the public debate that this was an anti-angling campaign?
Sure, Robert. I think that would be very fair for anglers within the angling community to have those sorts of sentiments. And we heard it from our own Fisheries Advisory Committee too, where that's what it was felt. This was largely what kickstarted this too, is a petition to ban fishing. And so there's some themes going on within the petition that it wouldn't be surprising that it would make someone feel that way. You're taking away opportunities because there's all these things we're having difficulty dealing with, and then that impacts the vast majority of anglers when it's a very select few that are participating in those bad behaviors, right?
The Alderville First Nation came before Port Hope Council recently and made a presentation about legal personhood for Rice Lake and the Ganaraska River. Now, in the context of public debate, what do you know about this, and could you share some thoughts on it?
Yeah, so legal personhood, it's a new legal concept for myself, our organization, and even in Ontario too. I can only think of one other case where it is like popped up, would be the Magpie River in Quebec. And so I think that it's so preliminary, it's difficult to see what this concept actually means, what it means for the Ganaraska River and apparently Rice Lake and potentially other water bodies as well. I listened in on the discussion too with the town council and the presentation that the chief from Alderville First Nations did. So it's new to me, and I would be definitely willing and open to having further discussions with that individual. And I think there was a conversation about a working group too. We definitely want to be a part of that engagement process. And it's also something that it's earmarked for conversations with our own Fisheries Advisory Committee too. I flipped some of the links and information to our chair. So at our next meeting, likely this fall, we'll be bringing up the topic and learning more about it. It's new to us, and that's all we can do is just dive in and understand more about it and what it actually means for the water bodies and for people.
So as it pertains to the future of the Ganaraska River, what's next?
That's a good question. I think one of the things that we'll see in the future is likely conducting a creel survey and just gathering angler information. So angler use and information, we'd be pushing for something like that. Hopefully the ministry follows through on doing that initiative, and then follow up and follow up with the fisheries advisory councils that we have as well, doing some information sharing and just learning more about the sanctuary and the extended fall season as well. And then lastly, just ongoing engagement and working with the Port Hope Salmon Working Group. Just because this proposal was implemented doesn't mean we should stop having conversations with that group and all the people and stakeholders represented on the group too. Sorry, my dog's coming into the picture now too, Robert.
Just for clarity, what is a creel survey for those who don't know what a creel is?
Yeah, creel survey is this a way typically government agencies would gather angler related information. So it'd be like, How long were you fishing? Where did you come from? How many fish did you catch? Did you keep any? Just basic information like that that actually tells you a whole lot about a fishery.
Adam Weir, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Yeah, for sure, Robert. I really appreciate it. Anytime.
That was Adam Weir, fisheries biologist for the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.